Go to thecognitiverampage.com. Keep fueling the change. Help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support. Love you.
The Cognitive Rampage, a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects. Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your Cognitive Rampage. Double checking this sound. I know you're probably tired of hearing that at the beginning of each one. But I miss you, Steve Stone. I miss you, Steve Stone. Used to be in the studio with me. Double checking everything was working good. Wish I'd get some thumbs up too. Make sure it's working good. See, if I pull that up, they're not going to be able to hear her, right? So, what I do as always, roll over to the page real quick. Double check I popped up live. See, it's working. Because I'm telling you, there's nothing worse than doing an entire podcast. Uh-oh, there we are. Looks like we're live at Double Check. I'm telling you, there's nothing worse than going live all the way, doing an entire podcast, and oh no, it's not there. But we're here. We're here going live talking about it. This one I labeled curing anxiety. Now, I know when just writing that, much less reading that, that a lot of people that experience or are affected by this, you tend to go, oh, whoa, what? Right? See, that's that little hope I talk about, because a little hope goes a long ways. Those are those small podcasts that I'm doing now called Mental Dose. Those little small ones I talked about on the previous podcast I'd be kicking out. Mental Dose number two will populate on the podcast here soon. I also have to drop the interview I did with Zach Rhodes still. Zach Rhodes, we talked about addiction for a while, and we haven't put that over to iTunes yet and dropped it, but it is on Facebook. So if you're watching here live, you can scroll down. Actually, it's not. You know what? I took it down. It's on YouTube. It's on YouTube to watch right now. That's where we used to go live, but it'll populate again soon. The YouTube page, you can always go there, Cognitive Rampage, and find that. That's where everything tends to get uploaded first. But if you're following here on Facebook, this is where everything happens first, where I go live doing those small videos and where I go live here on the podcast too. So that little bit of hope, if you're being affected or dealing with anxiety, if you will, it's not a word I like to use when talking about it, because you're dealing with it is like you're making deals with it. Then that little hope that you may have felt when you hear someone or something talking about curing it. And that's the kind of hope you need to fill each of your days with. I talked about doing a list this morning about what you want. A lot of people don't know what they want. So I did a video to say, what do you want? And to write it down. And I stressed on the video that many people don't actually do the work and write it down. And I've said it a few times on the podcast about my book, which is available on Amazon, that it's actually a process. It's an application. It's something you literally do, not just read it literally, but there's tons of work in there. And a lot of people tend to read and kind of make their minds up about what it is or what it isn't before anyone actually does the work, before you literally sit down and do the work and write it down or work out the philosophy or applying the steps of RSA that I talk about in my book. Many people don't. We tend to just read and said, hey, you know, and I get you. Don't get me twisted. I get, hey, I read the book. All right. Is that enough? You know, I did that. My God, much less you want me to do homework and do other work, right? And as a therapist, many times, sometimes I would assign homework in quotes, if you will, and most of the time, 90% of the time, my client wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. They'd come back, but yet they'd be coming back to therapy, which is great as long as you keep going, right? But they wouldn't do the work. Wouldn't put it in to do the work. It was easier to just show up and say, hey, what's the cure? Let me talk about it. Tell me what to do. Tell me what pill to take. Tell me how long it's going to last, right? We're searching for that cure that quick. But when it actually comes to putting in the work, that's where a lot of people actually drop the ball. That's where it gets worse. And I get it. Don't get it twisted, people. I'm not speaking from a pulpit here. By no means am I telling you that just do the work and it's all easy, or I don't understand what it's like when you're sitting there and asked to do things that don't seem like they'll help or don't seem like they'll work or may seem really easy. You see, a lot of times, a lot of help with mental health comes across as being very easy. Last week, I talked on the podcast about doing a behavioral journal, right? A behavior journal was different from a writing journal. Seems easy, right? That can't do it, we might say. That's not going to help me, especially if you believe it, would be my rebuttal to that. But putting in the work and doing it, trying to really work to get better, not just trying to think to get better. You see, when we approach or deal with anxiety, a lot of times we look at it as this mental battle or this thing that we have to go to war with or take on. Rather than being an observer, I talk a lot in my book about becoming an observer of your thoughts, not a reactor. And it seems very plain. I do get that. But if you step back and you're able to see, you know, let me observe my thoughts. Leo used to tell me, shout out to you, Leo, my mentor, I write about a lot in the book. Leo used to tell me, become an observer of your thoughts, right? And so I added, you know, rather than being a reactor, right? We can sit back and what he would say is become an observer of your thoughts and choose, you choose what you allow to flow through you or what you allow to flow around you. Now, I know it can be some high speak, but we can choose what we download to be real or to be present or to be something that we believe, right? So become an observer of your thoughts is a step to doing so, but it's also about putting in the work, right? When we observe the thoughts, we can recognize them and we can change them, but this isn't always going to fix it, right? That helps bring down the red line. That helps bring down that redlining, you know, moment where we're sitting there. But there's a different approach that we can take to anxiety. Because it's not this thing that we can see, it's not a broken arm, it's not this, bacteria infection or virus, right, that we can determine, it's very hard to, you can't see it, so a lot of times we manifest it to be this thing, or a lot of times this person, or this moment, or this thing that happens to us, or unfortunately further down the line to say this is who we are, or I am affected by anxiety. I have anxiety rather than it's something I'm experiencing, right? Remember, any mental health diagnosis is a group of symptoms. That's all it is. It becomes a group of symptoms. They've pulled into one little puddle, which can be very subjective too at moments, right? It runs some normalcy baseline. And that becomes the diagnosis. And many times we need to do that as practitioners or people because we know what we're working with in a sense. But you have to remember it's still theoretical in its approach, right? But doing the work becomes different. And what seems tedious, it really does. It's like that day the substitute teacher's in class and they hand out that worksheet, right? And you're like, I'm serious, seriously? I'm in ninth grade and I'm doing a crossword puzzle right now? I'm doing a word search? Are you kidding? You know, at least play a video, you know? But it's the actual small little steps, because the way that anxiety, now look, anxiety can manifest in multiple ways, right? Whether it's through trauma and things that we experience or things we're going through in the moment. It doesn't always have to be this past traumatic event buried deep inside of us mysteriously causing our anxiety. That just scares the hell out of most people when you're thinking, oh my God, I could be affected by something I don't even know that I can't even bring up, right? And a lot of times we may dredge through old things, right? Looking for what that may be. Anxiety can come on in many different ways, manifest in many different ways in our lives, whether that's from things we've seen, things we've watched, things we've been through, and especially what we think. And then what we think about what we think, right? I mean, essentially, that's the definition of panic disorder, right? Panic disorder is having a fear of the panic attack. And then we are afraid of what we think, thus then trying to correct what we think in the moment. And then when we apply it, it goes, hey, look, I'm coming down a little bit, but hey, it's still here. Right, it's still here. And I would tell you that there's not a quick fix, right? But I can promise you that you can cure it. You see, for me, hearing things like that, I know feels good. Just when you hear that, the thoughts we create beyond that, that little speck of hope feels good. It doesn't have to be something you live with your entire life. And having gone through anxiety a lot in my life, in and out, right? I've kind of understood that from a different standpoint, right? Other than this thing that we can just cure or nip in the bud or even go at and fight, right? And how that becomes relevant in our lives a lot of times is how we think about that, how we think about the anxiety, then we think beyond that and say, man, something must be wrong with me, right? The panic attack may set in, or we spend 20 minutes fighting the panic attack, if you will, right? When, rather than trying to reconstruct how it gets there and how that affects our lives, right? So curing anxiety is certainly a possibility, if not a guarantee, when you put the work in and you're willing to challenge yourself and do the things that you may believe to be tedious or no way this is going to help what I experience, right? And some of that small stuff of doing, I talked about this morning with a list of what you want. People talk a lot about positive affirmations, etc., right? And these things can be very powerful, but it's how we use that tool. Any tool we apply in our lives, well, it's like a double-edged sword. It can have a this, but it can also have a that, right? So I used to talk about personal affirmations or positive affirmations. Many times you may, you know, look in the mirror, stand there and say, hey, I am a good person. But then you hear that other voice in the background, yeah, you're a piece of shit, right? And then it kind of jumps back in at you. And a lot of times those positive affirmations go back and forth with what you say and then what that little voice in the back of your head reminds you what you really believe, right? And so a better way, if you ask me, rather than just positive affirmations, which I'm sure in some way also are what I'm saying and telling you to do, but when you first wake up, and I mean when you first wake up, not when you wake up, get to it, get the coffee, not that part, right? Not when you have been up for a minute, right? I mean, whatever your method is, whatever your ritual is of when you first wake up, right? Is I want you to write that down, a list. I want you to write it down. I know it seems so tedious. I know it does. Because you're like, yes, Adam, you have no idea what I'm dealing with. And you want me to get up, you want me to write something, right? Yes, I do. Because remember, the thoughts that we have, the behaviors we've experienced, the beliefs about those experiences that we've created in our belief schemas or how we think, if you will, and the words we choose, the narrative we tell, if you will, about that, is why and how anxiety has gotten there and got stronger over time, how we shape that. Just changing your words can do a lot, right? But then you have to almost reprogram your brain. It's the most amazing thing, if you will, on earth, how it processes information. It's amazing. We're still, what's great though is we've made a lot of progress in the mental health field from a technology standpoint, like neurofeedback and some other things that we're able to apply to find out what thoughts really link these connections biologically, not just what we observe or think or hear from client or patient response or therapist, if you will, opinion. Right, we're finding multiple ways to challenge that, right? But remember, it takes time. It's not this one round knockout, right? I'd love to tell you can knock it out in 1 hour or do this, right? But it's the small steps that we have to take along the way that can make those changes. And something very small is a what are you grateful list. I'm serious. I know you hear this stuff, but this is part of the smallest steps that we take to begin to fight this. And I'm talking, write that list down. It may be short. It may be long. It doesn't matter. And it can be as basic as, I am grateful that I can see. I'm grateful I can hear. I can talk. I'm grateful that I can walk. See, these are things that may slip by us many times in life that seem, well, given to us, but to many, many people across the world, it's just not given. So we have to think about those people, but when we can wake up in the morning and list those simple things, see those very simple things that we are grateful for, it begins to process the mind and change in how it thinks differently when it first begins to wake up into what you know is your consciousness, right? Your dreams, your sleep, or what they are. You wake up in the morning, the brain kicks on, it's kind of like, all right, here we go, page one of today, we start writing. How that first thought, what that first thought is, how we toil with that first thought is very important. We tend to list anyway. Many people that deal with anxiety tend to do a checklist. You tend to wake up and go, okay, this is over here, this is right here, I'm okay. We do kind of a body check-in, right? We're like, all right, my heart's not racing, right? We do this body check-in. It's almost as if you're preparing for something you don't even know will happen that day. Preparing for it, if you will, as if this is going to be a fight. And I know when you deal with anxiety, what people tend to do is they create these systems of escape, as if, all right, if it happens, I'm exiting there. We go to public places where we know we may have to go, like a grocery store or something, and you plan your paths out, right? You could be driving and only stay on the right side of the lane. There's so many things we can do that if you begin your day with this method, with this escape plan, well, you have already planned for the inevitable. And one of the quotes that I Well, one of my quotes that I love to say is, if you're not willing to question the impossible, then you're planning for the inevitable. And anxiety links to that. So when we first wake up in the morning, if we're planning for the inevitable, well, you've already got there. It's already happened, right? And so when we first wake up, if we can begin to change how our brain starts, if you will, at the starting line of the day, pull that list out. This is why you need to write it down. Because also the way, you may remember, check this out. You may remember when you were in high school or you're in school, maybe you're in school now, and you had your method of how you took notes, right? They always wanted you to do it their way, and it was never worked, right? You had your way of taking notes. You may still have that now, right? You may even have studied for a test and remembered, and you say, you know what? I have to write it down, not just from the worksheet they give us. I have to write it down because when I write it, I remember it. I remember a lot of times taking tests, right? I would go like, oh, you know what? I wrote that on the second page, kind of down at the bottom where I could barely read it. And I can remember where that comes from the notes. This is how the mind works. The mind uses what it hears, what it sees, what it observes, what it chooses to think. If you can think of the mind as a separate thing outside of you, if you think of the mind as almost your hard drive that operates however it wants to, and we kind of are just the receiver of those messages that we, well, choose it to think, which is pretty amazing too, that it's almost like we, because you can't turn your mind off, right? It's not about turning your mind off. Some research and flow states have been shown that when you reach, macro or micro flow states, that you can literally shut the brain down is what we start to see, which is great and can be good for healing. Really cool fringe research that's coming out. It's amazing to think about, right? But it's hard to stay in flow your whole life or your whole day, right? But how the mind begins to process that first in the morning is key. So then how you observe it, right? So the reason I told you in that video, what you want, write it down selfishly now. Selfishly is to write down what you want, is because now you're writing it, right? So as you're behaving something, it begins to process as something you learn, as you believe, something you know. And then as you also read your own list, it becomes, well, that. One of the tools I also give you in my book is how to find out what your life philosophy is. Most people also don't know what your life philosophy is, right? It's probably some quote or what grandpa used to tell. It's something like that, but it's not yours, right? So I give you a method of steps to follow that by the end, if you actually write it down and implement it, you'll have a 15-sentence-long life philosophy that's yours, that's been also even filtered to be rational, if you will, well, let's just call it of reality, right? And we'll be rational. So in that life philosophy, what I used to tell people is after you create that life philosophy foundation, you know, when you read the book and I show you how to do it, you'll have that 15 sentences of your philosophy. Now it'll grow, it'll get bigger, and it changes, right? Changes what we learn, what we experience. But what I tell people to do is after you have that philosophy, I want you to give it to some of your closest family members or friends, your partner in life, something like that. Typically, at least give it to the person you tend to call most when shit hits the fan. Give it to them. And then what you order them to do is when I call you, and don't text, okay? Otherwise, they can copy and paste your life philosophy and send it to you. When you call them, all they're supposed to do is read to you your life philosophy and hang up the phone. That's it. That's it. Read your life philosophy, hang up the phone. And you call back a second time. I'm going to read you, but no hello, hey, I told you, none of that. They just read your life philosophy and hang it up. Now, next time shit hits the fan and you go to make that phone call, what do you think? I know what to do here. Right. See, I talk a lot in the book about how we make choices actually goes into why we experience toil, depression, regret. And we have to question how we've been making choices and develop a new formula. And if we can go to a life philosophy rather than looking at the pros and cons list can be good for information. And a lot of times, though, it can give you more information than you needed that makes the choice even harder. Right. And so we want to be able to recall what we believe is right, what we believe is good, and what our beliefs stand for. Not when we got that pretty beautiful opportunity right in front of us, that's right there, that could sway us from it. I always say, go back, consult your philosophy, and what would you do then, and then make that choice. And a very quick way to do it is think about your children. Think about your kid, and if your kid came to you with the very choice you had to make at that moment, what would you tell them? That would be the closest to your truth and getting through the emotion that you could get to in making a decision, right? So we have to change how we make decisions along the way too. But all of this, that's later, that's the middle of my book. The first thing you got to do is change how you start your day, change how the mind begins to work. So when it sounds like small things I'm telling you to do, to literally write the list down and then literally visit that list in the morning, Nothing else. You grab that phone, you grab the list. I tell you to write it on paper so you see it. And the first thing you look at in the morning doesn't have to be the blue light, which isn't good for your eyes anyway. And then pull that piece of paper out and look at it and go down that list. I am grateful for this. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for this. And you may be sitting there going, this is stupid. This isn't working. Right. Because it's not a quick fix. Because to cure anxiety, it's not this, write it down, read it for a couple mornings and call it a day. Because the same way your mind has got to the place that it's at is over time. And what we choose to download, what we choose to allow to flow through us, what we choose to believe is a reality, what we choose to believe is who we are. Over time, that steps over time. But a lot of times when you're feeling that anxiety, man, I know it feels like never. It feels like, is this going to be forever? See, these are questions that don't matter. These are questions that are the wrong way of thinking, right? The wrong way of changing that. So when you're writing a list down and you begin your day with something very simple, I don't want you to think about how it makes you feel just then in the moment, right? You may feel good in the moment, sure. I know what you may be telling me is, I'm going to read that list. I'm going to get back up. Well, then if that's what you're saying, then you know you need to change how you're thinking, right? So it's about doing it day in and day out, because how you've been thinking up to now has got you here. So over time, if we can change how we start our day, how we think and process information, how we make choices, and we literally do that by small, tedious little things that may not seem like an answer for anything, is how we begin to change the big something. Because the way that big something, that big A word got there, or depression, or whatever word you want to add to it, the way that got there is the same way. It's a buildup. So the way that you eat elephant, one bite at a time, right? As my grandma would tell me, how do you get out of a swamp? Don't tell me drain it first. I never liked it when people said that. Drain it first? What do you want me to drain the swamp for? No. One alligator at a time. If you take on all the alligators, all of those thoughts, all of your behaviors, all of any addictions in quotes, if you take your behaviors even, if you take all of this and you begin to just, well, try to eat the entire elephant at once, it's not going to happen. One alligator at a time. And so one day at a time, one thought at a time, one word at a time. And what we have to do is then put ourselves through that filter of different behavior, of different thinking over time. And then as we do that, we literally begin to change how our mind works. How our mind works. You have to zap out of this quick fix idea in life, this magic pill cure. Now, I'm not saying that there's not a chance. I personally think that therapy and psychotherapy may go the way of the dinosaur once technology improves, and it may be all focused on the brain, but even the brain can't get around from the effects of its environment. The brain is affected by its environment. I've said it many times on podcasts. You can change what you think to change the environment, but only for so long. You can continue to reframe as long as you want to that you're in prison, but when you wake up and go to sleep, you know that you're in prison. So changing your thoughts and reframing is very powerful in the moment. But that's a right now fix. That's a redlining right now change it fix. But when we change how we think by doing different behaviors over time, this becomes a 3-4-pronged approach, because we're taking a biological approach, a neurological approach. We're taking a cognitive approach, and we're taking a behavioral approach. And trust me, when you've ever been around somebody that's anxious, it's hard not to be anxious. But when you're around people that are happy, it's a lot easier to be happy. So when we can become one of those happy people, well, that changes our environment. And I have to say, dump the negative people around your life. Dump the people that have something shitty to say every day. You got to walk away from that. You have to be willing to get down to the bare bones of your beliefs, your thoughts. You have to get rid of it all. You got to be willing to go all the way down to the foundation, maybe even tear up the foundation and pour a new slab. You got to be willing to get rid of it all. I can't say that these people can't come back, or the things that you love can't come back in your life. You may not want them back with the new you that you build. The way we've got built, the way you've become who you are now, is through what? How? What you believe, what you behave, what you do, basically, how you think, what you think. This makes up the person and what you or who you believe yourself to be. So we have to be willing to change all of that, challenge that, and do those small, tedious things. those small, tedious things. Write down that list of what you want and do it like I said in the video this morning. You do it like a kid. You write it down. I want this. I want that. I want this. I want that. Write it down like that, what you want. Be selfish about it. It's okay. Write that down. You may surprise yourself. I did. I did this list and I was like, oh shit. I didn't know I wanted that. I didn't see it. And it's okay. There's no wrong list of what it is you want, right? Of course, unless it goes against your own beliefs and your philosophies or it hurts other people, I would say that's probably wrong, subjectively at least. But we have to take the small things and begin to change it a little at a time, a little at a time. See, cognitive approach, the thinking approach, changing what you think, this is powerful, but it's not enough, right? I talked about in the last podcast, you have to implement your behavior, but biology is just as important. I mean, you can do all the rethinking and rebehaviors you want to a lot of times, and that's not going to affect the biology, right? At least the way we're learning how the brain works. The brain receives information through its senses, right? So we have to change how we're feeding information to the brain and what information we're feeding. You have to be willing to change that. But you also have to be willing to believe that you can cure anxiety, that you can go beyond that. This is not forever. I know when you're sitting there, you may be shaking, have things like seizures or something, and it may feel like this is forever. If you believe it is, it might be. But I'm here to tell you that it's not, that you can cure that. You can move beyond that. But you have to be willing to do the small steps, to do the work. Even those things that you're listening to this podcast and cursing me out, going, you piece of shit. No, there's not a chance. Yeah, you got to be there, Adam. You should see. I know. But are you doing the work? See, a lot of times we put in more complaints and more issues about what isn't than more work about what we can do different, about what we can change. And it's those small things. When you're standing at a mountain of anxiety and panic and some asshole like me tells you to make a what you're grateful list for, you look at me like I'm crazy. Like, seriously. Hey, but David wasn't so crazy in front of Goliath with that little slingshot, was he? Nah. Whether it's metaphoric or real, I'm just telling you, right? You have to be willing to question the impossible, otherwise you plan for the inevitable. You have to be willing to do so. And those small, tedious steps, that's just one step that you can take. But then just take 15 days, 20 days, 30 days, take a year, take 6 months of doing that each morning. And I mean, when you're brushing your teeth, when you're in the shower, I'm talking about keep that list going in your mind. I'm grateful for this. I'm grateful for this. And a lot of times you'll get your go-to sentence. You'll get that go-to, right? Back when I was really experiencing some heavy stuff, you know, Leo gave me a good sentence. There's no shooter, Adam. There's no shooter. A lot of that pinned to my background of things I experienced, but that became my go-to. That became my one-liner, right? There's no shooter, Adam. I have a different line now, and I'll share it with you all. The one that I tend to use now when I worry about the future, or I'm worrying about, you know, this podcast, or I'm worrying about this job, or this client, or this family member, whatever it is I'm worrying about. You know, it may come off crazy to y'all, but I'll be honest with you. I just say, give it to God, baby. And that works for me. And it may work for others. It may work for nobody. A lot of intellectuals may laugh at me and walk me down what I can prove road. But I can tell you this, if that sentence works for you, if prayer works for you, then it works, right? So you can find that go-to line that you can pull out in that moment. But here's a different approach of that moment. And now, mind you, in quotes, I keep referencing that moment. Now, if you deal with anxiety and panic, I need you to probably not listen to this part, all right, because it can be triggering what I'm going to talk about and what I'm saying. I probably should have gave that trigger warning in the beginning of this, as long as we know what's happening. So that moment, okay, just giving you a moment to get off and not listen to this if, you know, you're triggered by something like that, okay? If you know what your trigger words, if they're around that moment or those panic attacks, then don't listen to this and find a different way and have somebody else listen to it and tell you about it possibly. But that moment that you fear, that moment when it becomes uncontrollable, that moment possibly when your body starts to shake and you're not controlling it, you're not sure what's happening, you're short of breath, you feel like you're choking, the head swells, your vision goes fucked up, you feel like your gait cycles off, you can't see anything, because remember this, your eyes tend to dilate during anxiety. So your eyes and pupils will dilate during a panic attack or anxiety. So it's not that you have some brain disease. It's not that you're having a seizure. Another thing you should probably know is seizures, tend to last for about 10 seconds, 30 seconds, right? Now, there's different disorders that can go further, but this is what I'm telling you from the basic, because if you're experiencing anxiety, a lot of times people believe that's what's happening to them. One, people are non-responsive during a seizure. They're not talking to you. Eyes tend to roll in the back of the head. They can't speak to you. So if you're shaking in that moment that you think is a seizure, and it's lasted longer than a minute or 30 seconds, and you're into that 10, 20, 15 minute range, if you're up there, then I'm telling you, it's anxiety, not seizure. So rest your head. You're not dying of some rare brain disorder, okay? More than likely, okay? Because the averages are very small of what you're experiencing, okay? And I know at the time it's hard not to think, well, we are that special 0.01% person, right? I know it's difficult to do that. But what begins to happen when we think we've been triggered or we think that moment is occurring, we brace for impact as if a car accident is on the way. Because we are planning for the inevitable. Because of how and what we think and behaviors and what we choose to believe, our environment, and no doubt you may seriously be in some stressful shit. And you may seriously be toiling with some serious shit. I'm not taking away from that, nor am I going to tell you to reframe that moment and everything will be okay. But what is okay to do, you know you've survived them. You know you've been through them. You haven't died yet. These are the facts. See, I love to use Sherlock Holmes, is we can't use theories to shoot facts. We have to use facts to shoot theories. So as you process in your mind about what's causing it, what it is, notice that you tend to be creating theories, shooting the basic facts that you have. But if you flip that and you take the facts that you do have, I have survived every panic attack. I have survived the anxious moments I thought I wouldn't. Every time I thought I was going to die, I didn't. That's a fact. Those are the facts. Now take those facts and create a theory. I probably don't have some rare brain disorder, right? I'm not dying of a heart attack, right? These are things where it transfers into that. We can say, you know what? I know for a fact it's not seizures because they're lasting longer than 30 seconds to a minute, etc. I more than likely don't have epilepsy. And I've survived every one of them. See, with those facts, I can create a theory that I may be able to make it down to the park today. Because with those facts, and I don't allow my mind to run off with whatever it wants to do, but I rope that in, then I go to the park, right? Then you get in the car. Then you go give that presentation, that speech you've been worried about, right? You say those things. You go to it because if it was a phobia, which anxiety is linked to many phobias, agoraphobia being one of those, leaving the house. Fear of leaving the house is agoraphobia that is closely tied with anxiety, right? Because what we then do is we become the referee or the coach, right? What we're doing is say, well, if I get anxious when I drive, I just won't drive. There, I've controlled that. We're control freaks is what I should say, not coaches. We become control freaks, right? So we begin to limit our life in fear of that moment. And when you limit your life and opportunities, well, that rolls into bigger and worse things over time. But I would tell you to then face that elevator if that's what you're afraid of. Hold that snake if that's what you're afraid of. You have to combat that in that way with behavior as well as with your thoughts and your routine and how we think and reprogramming all of those at once, right? That's what we have to do. We have to change that. But I want you to take a different look when that moment comes along. If you feel that moment is building, and it's happening, I want you to lay down and say, bring it on. I want you to lay there and go, okay, this is going to happen. Observe it. Almost observe yourself. I know it seems a little crazy, but I also say you got to be willing to get a little crazy to get a little sane, especially to get a little healthy. You got to try some different stuff. You got to talk out loud. You got to hear your own thoughts out loud so you can hear how crazy they might be, how irrational they might be that's creating them, right? But rather than fearing the moment and allowing that fear of that moment to transpire, and rather than fighting it, because as I was talking earlier, we begin to brace for impact, don't we? We have our escape routes. You brace for impact, you might. And when you do that, your body tenses up as you brace for the impact, and we get ready for it, and we'll just white knuckle our way through another one. Remove yourself from that moment. Observe your body mentally. Step away from your thoughts and observe them. Don't download them and don't believe the inevitable is about to happen. And essentially say, that's what it is and that's what it's going to do. Acceptance of what it is a huge step to beginning to cure anxiety. Accepting that it's not a brain disorder. Accepting that you're not in cardiac arrest. Because I promise you this, you did not breathe your way out of a cardiac attack. Okay? So if you thought you were having a cardiac issue and you managed to breathe your way through it but believe you have cardiac issues, you don't. Because there's no breathing your way out of a heart attack, okay? Maybe you can calm it down, but if that's what's happening, that's what's going to happen. Exactly right, Tim Drugan, always commenting on here. Shout out to you, Tim Drugan, Tribe of Change. Yes, surrender instead of bracing, just like a car crash, you get more hurt. Thank you, sir. That is a great example, Tim. That's what happens. That's a great example. I was talking about tensing up. You see the car coming? We all know it. If you tense up in the car crash, you're going to break something. You're going to jolt your neck around. You're going to have a problem. But if you're not, you just kind of go with it. You surrender to it. You go through it, and then your body moves. Well, to more safe locations as it's tossing or being shoved around from the accident. You survive, less injured. You get more hurt when you tense. Exactly right, Tim. And that's what I'm telling you about the moment. You can't allow the fear of the moment from happening to control your life from here on out. You have to embrace that, surrender to it, and allow it to happen. Now, I know this seems like up here talk, and everybody wants this biological answer for how it can happen, but we're not there yet with technology. We can't point that out. There's tons of theories of why anxiety is around. I'll give you one of those theories while I'm on a tangent. In order to stay alive as a human being, back with our ancestors, you needed to be on point. I actually write about it in my book. When I said, everybody's sitting around a campfire back then, right? I said, campfire. You're sitting around a fire trying to keep warm, keep some light on for a while. You hear a rustle in the bushes and pew, somebody took George. Or whatever the caveman name was back then. Somebody swiped him. Some monster came out of the bushes and gone, right? You had to be on point. So I bet next time when you're sitting around the fire tomorrow night, you may have your spear in your hand. You may not be sitting around the fire, right? Who knows where you might be, but you learned you had to be on point back then. You had to click. Am I going to have to hunt here to eat, or am I going to have to run, right? This is the fight, flight, or freeze. This is how you stayed alive. And the better your fight, flight, or freeze was, typically the longer you stayed alive. And this got passed down and passed down and passed down. So we walk around with this fight, flight, or freeze. Now, here's the thing. You can say we live in a safer world, yes, because less people are dying of diseases, less people are dying, period. And if we stick to the numbers, we can say it's a safer place. But the things that we do daily, if you look at them, can be crazy. Have you been on I-4 in Orlando or 75 on the west side? Have you been on these roads and really looked what's happening? You have a one-ton vehicle, a semi, doing 90 miles an hour, 3.5 feet from a Prius. You see, this becomes insane. But hey, we just check it off, right, is what we got to do. As we just, well, I got to get to work, right? So we do this crazy thing, and we go do it every day. Mind you, this is where a lot of road rage comes from. The reason people are so angry, the reason they hit the horn, they're flicking you off, they're screaming at people. The reason it comes from that is because what you're doing is a hyper-intensive thing. It's hyper. It's like being in war, if you will, right? It's intense. So my point is, it's a dangerous time to be alive, especially mentally, because our brains, in my opinion, were not ready for the overload of information that is upon us. From what you can see, what you can read, what you can observe, what people tell you, what you hear, it becomes scary. Who we're supposed to be, how far we're supposed to make it, how successful we're supposed to be, right? All of these things can play into the mental battle, the mental hypertension, right? That mental war, if you will. You choose the word. It's your belief, right? All this plays into it. So back down, backing in, digressing, right, from why we feel this way and the need to react, is we're walking around evolutionary hunters where survival of this mechanism helped us. So the body, the mind, it's open to protect you. So that's what it's trying to do, is to protect itself, which is why why people dealing with severe anxiety tend to make irrational decisions. Like, well, I just won't drive, and then I won't deal with it, because we want to think we're in control and we know we can't really much survive. Now, if you live in New York or bigger cities, of course, you can definitely make it without a car, but you're still going to have to transport somewhere, right? So the overload of information that mixes into it can become overloading. It's overwhelming, you may hear, with anxiety, right, of what we're supposed to be and all of these things. and they play into how anxiety manifests. But when that moment approaches and it comes to it, you know you survived it. Take the facts. Shoot the theories with the facts. Don't shoot the facts with theories. More than likely, you're going to guess wrong. But this evolutionary development that has saved our lives at one point also becomes misplaced here. The brain wants to save itself, so it tells you to do this decision. It tells you to make this decision. It tells you to drive in the right-hand side of the lane. It tells you just lay down and go to sleep. It tells you not to leave the house. It tells you don't give a presentation. It tells you these things that, well, may help it survive or not experience those things, but it's not going to help you live. And we have to balance those, the awareness of those. There's nothing wrong with you. And see, that's hard to manifest. It's hard to believe, really, right? And nothing is wrong with us. But that's where we need to be, is in that belief schema that nothing's wrong with you. And we begin to change how we think and what we think over time. Oh, it looks like I may have lost everybody. Oh, I'm double checking. I was coming to the crescendo, y'all. I was coming to the, I love that word. That's from V for Vendetta, by the way.
It tells you to drive in the right-hand side of the lane. It tells you just lay down.
Hey, I guess we are still going. Look at that. You know what? Maybe I'll re-listen in life to see where I was going to, huh? Does this count as notes?
Balance those. The awareness of those. There's nothing wrong with you. And see, that's hard to manifest. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
And nothing is wrong with us.
Yeah. Ooh, that gets me hyped. Mm. Is it kind of weird, like you just heard it, now you hear it on the back end? There we go. So, I love that. I can go back. That doesn't count as notes. Don't judge me on that, all right? All right? But the belief about curing anxiety, the belief that nothing is wrong with us, that we can change it, we do that with small steps over time, the same way it has gotten in our lives. But we have to be willing to do those small, what you may believe to be stupid, waste of time, a weak approach, that's not going to have any effect or any help. We have to be willing to start there. We have to be willing to go back there. And a tool for doing that is doing that grateful list in the morning. And as soon as you wake, read through that grateful list. Read through it over and over and over. Laminate it and take it in the shower with you. Sit on the shitter holding the damn thing. Take it to work with you. Send it to your friends. Call somebody. Let them tell you about it. But tell yourself what you're grateful for. I don't care. You may think, oh, I don't have anything to be grateful for. I don't have to. Well, you don't have all the things life may have told you you're supposed to have. But maybe you can see, right? You can hear. You can walk. You can talk. You can taste. You can eat. You can cook. You can do these things. Many people can't. And if you can't do those things, then I urge you to focus on what you can do and not what you can't do and get far away from what you're supposed to do. But what we are supposed to do in this life is fight for our own lives. And the way you fight for your own life is with every tool, with every aspect, with every which way we are influenced, be willing to change all of those things, take ourselves back down to a foundation to rebuild. And we do that with small steps, small tools over time, making lists, reading them. Because now your mind, you're forcing. Look, what's great about it is the mind can only do one thing at once. I'm just telling you that. The mind can only do one thing at once, right? We know that. It can only do one thing, right? You think you can multitask? Bullshit. There's all kinds of research where people thought they were master multitaskers and they could not do it. They actually perform worse than people that did a task at a time. For now, at least, our brain can focus on one thing at once. That's all it can do. That's all it can do. So if we're laying there in the dark, if we're thinking about this or that, the other, and we're allowing our brain to control what we think and walk us down a road, that's what we're doing. But if we can distract it at the moment, if we can change how it thinks, what it thinks, and we do that by implementing small things like the grateful list first thing in the morning, take it with you all day, followed by the I want list. Because the I want list, now I don't want you to fill this I want list with some negative bullshit. I don't want you to write on this list, I want to live life without anxiety. Because now you're reminding yourself, guess what? You have anxiety, right? So it's not about that. It's about, I want this. And make them tangible things. I want a house. I want a boat. I want a child. I want, you know, and write it like a child, right? Make that list out and roll out that I want list like crazy. And take that grateful list too, because these two things will remind you, right? And again, it's not going to cure you tomorrow. It's not going to cure you the next day. But over time, when we do small things, I'll give you more tools as I take the podcast further even. That's what episode 207, been doing this almost 4 years now, 5 years now. So as I go farther, I give you more. But starting at the beginning, it's those small things that can do it. Your mind can only focus on one thing at once. So rather than focusing on preparing for the moment that's not even occurred, prepare as if the moment is not going to occur, and we do this by changing what we think and how we think, small behavior things. Read that grateful list. Develop your own philosophy. Write down what you want. Write it down. Do the work. And if you read my book already, tell me if you actually did the work. If you actually wrote down the RSA steps. If you actually wrote down and have your philosophy. And did you do the personal inventory at the back? Did you use your philosophy to then fill in that personal inventory? Because that's how you change behavior. See, it's a whole step in that book. But when you do the work, you begin by checking the biology in the beginning. And then triple checking the biology. Because you can change what you think all you want, but biology is going to win, right? You're checking those things. And when you move from those things, you got to then check how you think and what you think, what you believe. Once you've got that down and you're starting to work on that, you can change how you make choices, how we behave. Because the choices we make essentially predict our behavior. So then you work on that, and you do that by creating a philosophy. Not choosing from emotion, but choosing from the wisdom that is well-earned in your life. Because trust me, you earned a lot of wisdom, right, for the shit you've been through. So you need to use that wisdom to make choices differently. Then once we're making choices differently, we're automatically behaving differently. And then the last part of that book, I walk you through building an inventory, which is actually about people, places, and things, which go further into that, things you love to do, and trying to build up your enthusiasm. So now we're working on our environments. Now we can work on our environments because we're making choices differently. We've challenged our beliefs, formed them to be more rational, and we've checked out our biology. This is a 4- or 5-prong approach to making change, and curing anxiety takes more than, well, I went to therapy. It takes more than irrational choices of knocking things out of your life. It takes work, small, tedious steps. Because, look, you can try to get in shape if you want to, but if you do that one thing, more than likely, over and over again, that's all you're going to be good at, right? You have to diversify in what you're doing, essentially. So when you diversify your entire attack, this is how you cure anxiety. You cure anxiety from a cognitive standpoint, a behavioral standpoint, check your biology standpoint in the beginning to make sure. From a how we make decisions standpoint, how we choose, which predicts our behavior, to then changing our behavior, those behavior, those new people, places, and things, then change our environment. That's a full-on attack. And then you can launch a full-on attack at anxiety and say, I'm putting in the work. And it means the small work. And then you can feel good about that. You can feel good about the small work you did. Even if writing that list makes you feel good for those freaking 5 minutes, wasn't it worth it? Because that's what we say, right? If you're experiencing anxiety, you say, give me 5 seconds just to be okay. Well, writing that list and reading it is going to give you that 5 seconds, that 5 minutes, those moments to avoid that moment. And should that a moment arise, surrender to it because you have survived it. You've already survived them already. Use facts to shoot theories, not theories to shoot facts. Be willing to go down to the nub of who you believe you are so you can rebuild that to the superhero I know you are. That's how you cure anxiety, people. It can be cured. You can cure it. You can move beyond it. It is not the rest of your life. You do not have to live that way forever. But one thing that will be different about you is when you get through it, when you cure it, when you're done, when it's come through you, you will feel a little odd because you will be a new person. You will be a stronger person. And so however you might be feeling and think at that time may still feel odd, but it's because it's a new you. And that's okay. And like I like to say, uncomfortable is where the change is. And that's where you have to be willing to go. You have to be willing to be uncomfortable to get that change. That's the approach that's necessary. And like I like to say, if nobody's in your corner, then allow me to be in your corner telling you I believe in you. I just need you to believe in you. And believe anxiety can be cured. It's not overnight. Don't be irrational. Not a week, however long you've been experiencing. I can't even give you an equation to say, well, if you've been experiencing anxiety for 6 months, it takes 6 months to get a blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. And if somebody even is telling you it's forever, or it's just something you got to cope with, get away from them. Get away from them. Get them out of your life. If a therapist is telling you it's something you got to learn to cope with, stop seeing them immediately. Learn to fix it. You can. There are ways, there's technology, there's so many helpful people out there and helpful therapists and practices and places you can go that can help you, using technology and many other things that can help you cure it. You can cure it. I promise you, you can. You can. Just know the person that comes out on the back end of that, it's going to be powerful. It's going to be one of them lightsabers that hard to control. You got to be prepared for it because it's going to be beautiful and powerful. You already are beautiful and powerful. You're already those things. It's about believing you are those things. It's not about saying when I get, once I do, and then. Once I get through, I'll then be that. It's not about that. You are that person now. I guess I'm saying a lot of things I used to say, and I'll give you this one. If I had an AU, and I had a BU, if the AU has accomplished everything you believe to be, well, what makes people successful or happy by your own definition, and they've achieved all of that, but that AU, well, has not faced any adversity, no anxiety, no depression, no heartbreak, no being broke, no being sick. It's all been just kind of a easy ride there. Now the other one, the other you, well, it's also achieved whatever your definition of success and happiness is, except that other you has experienced everything that you've experienced or are experiencing now and has still got there. I ask you, which one do you respect more? That's right, not the AU. So remember, be you. That be you is who you respect more. You would not even respect yourself if you accomplished all those things with no adversity, with no struggle. I know the struggle is real, y'all. But you'd respect that be you. So remember to be you. Cure it. Don't fight it. Don't embrace it. Don't cope with it. Don't deal with it. Don't let it be your issue. Damn sure don't let it define you. Damn sure don't let it be you. Work on it. Work on it smartly. Do the small things. Take all the approaches I've talked about and work on them every day. And then over time, you'll see. And you will respect you more than you ever did in your life. Because through the struggle, through the trials, this defines us. Not the joys, not the easiness, not that road. How we deal with our struggles and what we're affected by, and how we overcome those, that is really you. I hope you're taking care of you. Whew. I felt like a good flow there, man. I wanted to bring in some people that were listening on the podcast or talking here, but Jersey's barked. That's my producer, and Grace never barks, but Jersey's letting me know that's the end of the podcast, so I'll leave it there. I'll leave it there. I appreciate it, Zach. I'll be dropping your podcast today, brother. Zach Rhodes, again, check out his podcast, the Social Exchange Podcast. Great guy. We talked about addiction last week or the week before, but I'll be dropping your podcast today, brother. I appreciate you listening here. I appreciate everybody else listening and tuning in. Share it with somebody that may think that there's no hope, you know, somebody that may be had given up or is finding irrational ways to control it. Let them know that they can cure it. Let them know they can do it, but support them. Love them. Hug them. And don't ask them, are you okay? Just hug them and talk to them like normal. Because sometimes, if you're dealing with anxiety or depression, somebody asks you, are you okay? Your first response is to go, fuck no. Right? So just hug them, love them, support them, and talk about something in left field. Okay? Whew. I appreciate everybody watching and listening and sticking with the Cognitive Rampage for so long. Again, shout out to Black Sheep Designers up there in New York. Sending down the shirts, taking care of us out here, trying to make me look pretty. See, at least this awesome, cool design keeps all the attention away from this. All right, man. But yeah, love you all. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage.